This is Lawrence Spivak inviting you to Meet the Press.
Meet the Press, now celebrating its 20th year on television and winner of every major award in its field, is a public affairs presentation of NBC News. Meet the Press is brought to you by Allstate Insurance Companies, the good hands people who find new ways to bring you better insurance protection. You're in good hands with Allstate.
Our guest today on Meet the Press is the Republican candidate for Vice President, Governor Spiro T. Agnew of Maryland. We'll have the first questions now from John Chandler of NBC News.
Governor, last week, all across the country, people were talking about the disturbances which took place in Chicago during the Democratic National Convention. A few days ago, Senator Edward Brooke and members of Mr. Nixon's personal staff prepared a statement on the disturbances in Chicago, and yet Mr. Nixon, given this statement, didn't use it. Why didn't he use it?
I really can't answer the question. I guess it's one that would properly be addressed to Mr. Nixon.
Well, you have commented on the Chicago disturbances.
Yes, I have some very definite feelings about the Chicago disturbances.
Well, does this indicate a lack of coordination that you can speak out on it and he decides not to? Is this something we can look forward to in the campaign?
Well, I don't think you can say, Mr. Chancellor, that he decided not to speak out on it. I think he just perhaps didn't speak out at the moment that he was expected to by certain people. I'm concerned about the Chicago disturbances, and I'm watching the development of information on the Chicago disturbances with great interest. There seems to be a lot of dispute about what actually took place, the triggering influences, and I think we've got to wait a full development of the information before we can make a considered judgment about it, but there's little doubt that there was an extreme provocation brought about by heavy planning on the part of some people to disrupt things in Chicago.
What I'm trying to find out, sir, is how you can have enough information to make a statement on it, and Mr. Nixon can't.
Well, I didn't think that there was any tendency to believe that he didn't have enough information. He didn't say that, did he?
No, he just wouldn't speak out on an issue that seems to have been a dominant theme during the past week.
Well, it would seem to me that he's running his own campaign. He's going to make the statements when he believes that they should be made, and simply because his timing doesn't coordinate and correspond with those of his questioners isn't any reason to say he doesn't have an opinion.
Governor, there are people who've been watching both campaigns, and they say he's going to be the statesman and you're going to be the one who talks out on the hard issues. Is that true?
Do you mean to say that you believe that someone who talks out on hard issues is not a statesman? I thought that was the definition of a statesman.
No, sir, I'm using statesman in a technical sense. A statesman is a man, sometimes in a political campaign, who doesn't get involved up to his elbows in issues of controversial issues, and yet you seem to have, and Mr. Nixon seems not to have, and that's why we think it's a valid question.
Well, I quarrel with your definition of a statesman.
Thank you, gentlemen. We'll be back with Meet the Press and more questions for our guest, Governor Agnew. But first, this message.
Auto accident claims. Can payments be made faster? I'm Ed Reimers for Allstate. Perhaps you've seen recent articles in the newspapers or magazines about the problems in settling auto accident claims, personal injury claims, as well as damage to cars. Well, cars are relatively quick and easy to fix. But what about the person who is seriously injured, hospitalized, facing long convalescence without an income while the bills pile up? Allstate has looked closely at this situation and has developed what we believe is a working answer to the problem. We call it Pay in Advance, a new way to settle personal injury claims. Here's how it works. In a bodily injury accident where an Allstate policyholder is clearly at fault, Allstate steps in with immediate financial help for the injured. Money to pay doctor fees and hospital bills. Money to pay for damage to the person's car. And money for food and clothing for normal family expenses. Allstate pays this money within the limits of the insurance policy, and we don't ask the claimant to sign a thing. Later, when the claimant is ready, Allstate offers settlement of the entire claim. Obviously, pay in advance can't be made to work in all personal injury claims. Liability is not always clear. But where liability is clear, where we've used pay in advance, we've found almost total satisfaction from the people involved. Other insurance companies are also using this or similar methods of settlement. We welcome this, and we look forward to the day when pay in advance becomes standard practice for all insurance companies. Pay in advance. another way we put meaning into the words. You're in good hands with Allstate.
Now back to Meet the Press, an unrehearsed press conference. Please remember, questions of the panel members do not necessarily reflect their own point of view. Here is our moderator, Lauren Spivak.
Resuming our interview on Meet the Press, our guest is the Republican vice presidential candidate, Governor Spiro T. Agnew of Maryland. You've just met John Chancellor of NBC News. The other reporters on our panel today are Philip Potter of the Baltimore Sun, James J. Kilpatrick of the Washington Star Syndicate, and Robert Novak of the Chicago Sun-Times. We'll continue the questions now with Mr. Potter.
Governor, the name's Justice Warren. Yippies and hippies tend to be swear words among the right wing in this country. And the word J. Edgar Hoover seems to be a rallying cry. In assailing Chief Justice Warren this last week for what you called his precipitate resignation, and in praising Hoover as a great American, do you intend to be pandering to the right-wing elements in the country?
Well, I think, Mr. Potter, you have to consider the oversimplifications that you have chronologically documented in your questions are really just that. When I spoke about Chief Justice Warren, my criticism of him ran not to his performance in the office, which is what most of the people that you're referring to criticize, but to the cold political situation of his leaving the office at a time that was politically uncomfortable. I think I made it completely clear that I have a great regard for Justice Warren. I don't agree with every decision he's ever handed down, but I find myself in agreement with many of them. The yippies and hippies, I am frank to confess I will have no truck with. I don't approve of what they're doing. I think that law and order is a term that can be misconstrued greatly, but in a free society, and no one can quarrel with the fact that the United States is a free society, law and order means the protection of the innocent, and that's what we're interested in.
Well, do you regard these youngsters who came to Chicago to protest against the war as all anarchists, or were you just referring to those who instigated the...
My understanding is that most of the members of the yippies and most of the hippies are anarchists. I haven't seen many people who align themselves with these undertakings, who don't burn the American flag, who don't fly the flag of the Viet Cong, who don't swear allegiance to Ho Chi Minh and Mao Zedong, and do things that are generally calculated to disrupt the dignity and the stature of the United States, and I don't agree with that kind of conduct.
But you don't so regard all the youngsters who rallied
absolutely
around McCarthy.
I don't. And I think one of the greatest departures I have with Senator Muskie lies in the fact that he said just yesterday, with regard to what happened in Chicago, we just have to let it happen so that there'll be a confrontation. I don't think we should let it happen. I think the permissiveness that pervades society today and the tacit condoning of that kind of conduct, which the irresponsible element emphasized there, is a detriment to our country. I do think there are a lot of young people that simply through a lack of knowledge, a lack of sophistication of what they should be doing and what their parents should be teaching them, those people are innocents who are being led astray, but we can't condone the conduct that's leading them astray.
Mr. Kilpatrick.
Governor, you and Mr. Nixon will be running in November, of course, not only against Mr. Humphrey, but also against former Governor Wallace. What is your current appraisal of the Wallace strength?
Well, Mr. Nixon and I prefer to believe that this is still a two-party system that we live in. And frankly, I don't think that the third-party candidacy is one that will have an effect that requires us to speak to it. We're running against Hubert Humphrey and Edmund Muskie, not
Your
against Mr. Wallace.
Is simply to ignore the Wallace candidacy?
Well, I would say that not to ignore the candidacy in a comprehensive sense. We have to respond to statements on our own that may provoke the media to seek our opinions about.
Beyond
but
that,
I'm not
sir,
going to speak to Mr. Wallace.
Now, I had rather this in mind. In the southern states, The appeal presumably will be made by the Republicans that a vote for Wallace is in effect a vote for Humphrey. Will you not be pursuing that appeal in the South?
I don't think I will. I'm here to talk about the issues and not to suggest the political tactics of how to assemble the vote.
Then on the whole, you tend to minimize what has been referred to as the Wallace threat.
I don't think it's nearly as serious as many people believe.
Think the polls are wrong in this? Giving him 16%?
Let me say this, that the polls are dependent on many variants, and they fluctuate from day to day. I have no reliance upon the accuracy of a poll that was taken 7 days ago.
Mr. Novak.
Governor, during your past week of campaigning, you suggested that the Vietnam War is winnable by the U.S. on a military basis, and specifically you said, quote, "We've got to rededicate our troops, our facilities, and our economies to winning this war," unquote. Now, did you mean that the goal of the United States in Vietnam should be a military victory rather than a negotiated settlement?
I don't recall the statement that's being quoted from using the word troops. It may be, but I don't recall it. Certainly, the whole thrust of my position on Vietnam is that the military information that's necessary to make judgments upon is not in my possession. I think basically the things that are done in Vietnam or omitted in Vietnam that come to our attention most emphatically are things of a political nature. And I've said on many occasions that the involvement in a military sense there is dependent upon recent information. Daily information that I'm not in a position to get.
Well, then what do you mean by rededicating ourselves, whether you use the word troops or not, our economies, to winning the war? What do you mean by winning the war?
Well, there are many things that we can do to come out of that thing with what you might call a whole skin. And I'm much disturbed about what's taking place, what's being said about what our position should be in the negotiations. I think Senator Mansfield said yesterday, perhaps we should fall back to something less than we're asking for. Now, this seems to be a tactic of negotiators, to move off, to be adamant until we move back three steps.
Well, specifically, do you think a military victory in Vietnam is possible for the United States today? You've suggested it is in your statement.
If you could define what a military victory would encompass to me, perhaps I could answer it.
Well, could you define what you mean by winning the war?
Winning the war would be to disengage from that war, still establishing the integrity of Southeast Asia, containing the creeping communism that the Seto nations just today denounced. That's winning the war.
You mean defeating the military powers of the communists in Indochina?
I didn't say that, did I?
Well, how do you disengage that way without defeating them?
You disengage by negotiating a settlement that is not a settlement that involves stepping out completely of the picture and leaving a vacuum into which the communist forces can continue their expansion in that sphere of the world.
Governor, may I ask you a question on the Fortas matter? In a recent New York Times interview, you said you personally supported the appointment of Fortas as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Now, what then is your position? Do you think that the president should have abstained from nominating a new Chief Justice?
Well, that is my position. Not that the president should have abstained from nominating a new Chief Justice, but my position basically is that I have nothing against Mr. Fortas as a lawyer and as a judge. I think he's a very competent person. I did say in that same interview, the portion that you didn't mention to me, that I didn't believe that it was a matter that should be taken out of the hands of the Senate. After all, the Senate has a function to perform here, and the Senate should make the judgment. I have nothing against Mr. Fortas. My position basically is that Chief Justice Warren, who was appointed by a Republican administration and who is a Republican, should not have put the Republican Party in the spot that it's in now by resigning before this election.
But, Governor, you say the Senate ought to be permitted to act on this thing, but as I understand it, there are a group of senators are trying to prevent that. Do you favor a vote by the Senate on this?
Well, action by the Senate can mean, to some extent, inaction. The Senate either consents or it doesn't consent. Either one of these things is an action in effect because it either confirms Mr. Fortas or prevents his confirmation. I say we have to leave that to the Senate.
And do you approve of the action of the senator that's trying to prevent a vote?
I don't think it's up to me to take a position in approval or disapproval of this particular nomination by the president. I think it's up to the Senate to make these judgments.
Mr. Chancellor.
Governor, I hope when I asked you that last question, you didn't infer that I was implying any lack of statesmanship on your part. It just seems to many of us that you're running closer to the issues than your running mate is.
Well, I didn't mean to be hostile in response to the question. I only meant that I feel very strongly that statesmanship, as we've known it in this country, involves just that, taking a precarious position so that your positions can be known.
Well, let me ask you about the statements made by Law and Order on three major candidates, and this is from your own speeches. You say that Wallace uses the phrase Law and Order as a hatchet, that Humphrey uses it as a shield against criticism, but that Nixon uses it as a pledge and a commitment to logic in America. Now, we've had several hundred civil disturbances or riots in the country over the past few years, and only in two occasions has federal power been used, in Detroit and here in Washington. What specifically can the federal government do about law and order that doesn't violate the old American principle that law enforcement is a purely local matter? You're a Republican governor. Surely yes. You must believe that.
Well, I do believe it, and I believe it most emphatically, but I think it's not just a question of what can be done in the functional sense by government. It's a question of the general tenor of the times. And when people look to see where a country's going, they look to the utterances of the people in the national government. They look to a national structuring of opinion. So that whether or not the federal government is able to affect directly or implement changes, the federal government nonetheless speaks for the United States and creates the image of the United States. Certainly no one knows this better than you in the electronic media.
Well, what specifically would you bring up in making your case against the administration in helping to create a permissive climate? What have people said or done?
Let me give you one very significant example. We talk about civil disobedience, and we talk about nonviolence. And there's a great tendency that I think the administration has been partially responsible in encouraging to regard nonviolent conduct as completely acceptable, whether or not it passes the line of civil obedience. Now, right now, if 300 people walked into this studio and stood in front of your cameras and disrupted this program, they'd be completely nonviolent. But nonetheless, they'd be interfering with the rights of others, your sponsors and you.
Mr. Potter.
Governor, 2 years ago, you were elected the governor of Maryland with very strong, substantial support from the Negro community and
yes.
from Democrats, too, particularly Democrats in Montgomery County, a place like that. Now it seems that the Negro leadership in Baltimore, at least, or a great part of it, seems to think you've betrayed their interests in the positions that you've taken on law and order. How do you propose to reach back to the Negro community and to reach out to the Democrats, which we're told very necessary to elect anyone president of the United States?
Let me answer that question by saying that I'm not sure that I can ever reconstruct the peculiar chain of circumstances that allowed such wide support of organization Democrats, of politically involved Democrats, to my candidacy. You know, the candidate that the party ran against me wasn't exactly acceptable to them. I think my positions are basically the same, but it becomes very difficult for me to enlist support of Negro Democrats actively involved in their party when they are supporting Negro Democratic candidates. And I would say about 90% of the Negroes in Baltimore City who were actively involved in my last campaign are supporting or are active Negro Democratic candidates. So you see, we have a political divergence that's taken place that I can't control. They have their own candidates. It's a political thing.
Mr. Kilpatrick.
On this same theme, Governor, it's widely assumed that you seriously damaged your image with Negro voters at the time of your famous reproach to the black leaders last April. Looking back on that meeting, are you sorry now that you spoke as you did?
I'm really not sorry that I spoke the words that I spoke. I think that substantively those remarks are just as valid today as they were the day I uttered them.
Under the same circumstances, you would say the same thing again?
I would think I'd have to say the same thing, and I want to point out one thing to you, Mr. Kilpatrick, that Dr. Martin Luther King and Mr. Roy Wilkins and Mr. Whitney Young, in a joint statement shortly after some of the 1967 disturbances, said exactly the same thing.
Nevertheless, the rebound was on you, and it continues to have a significant political effect, does it not?
I'm not so sure that rebound is still bouncing as high as it was.
Mr. Novak.
Governor, on the campaign trail, you have said that the student rebellion or the student disturbances are led by communists or communist sympathizers or the sort of persons willing to be identified with communist causes.
Yes.
Now, are you suggesting that these student leaders, rebel leaders, are under the control or direction of the Communist Party USA or under the control of Moscow?
I think they're under the influence of them without any question. They said that themselves. I believe there's an item in the news today where the members of the SDS say they're communist. They say
capital
they're
non-Marxist,
communist, Marxist communist.
Well, a communist party has a capital C in it, and there's been some speculation that there's some suggestion in your comments that they are taking orders from a foreign government. Do you really mean that?
Did I say that, Mr. Novak?
Well, with the capital C, you mean they're just playing left-wingers and not communists?
Well, I think one thing that we've got to resist the temptation to do is to read into a statement things that aren't in it. I say they are leaning toward the communistic thinking. Some of them are actively identified with efforts to overthrow the free enterprise system as we know it.
But there is a difference between being connected with a foreign power, I would say, and when you suggest that there is a communist party influence, that's your implication.
Well, I think a lot of them are connected with foreign powers. I think those that have made the circuit from Hanoi to Peking to Havana, receiving instruction from the active communists of the world, are probably actively identified.
Governor, the charge that's being made against you is that you believe it's more important to put down riots by strong-arm methods than to get at the root causes of the riots. Is that your position?
Well, of course, that's not a valid observation. I don't think anyone has provided more constructive proposals for the solution of these problems than I have.
What do you think is the best way of preventing future civil disorders?
I think we've got to attack the problem of the environment first. I think we've got to relieve the impaction of our cities so that we can convert them into malleable, workable neighborhoods that will allow people to live and work in harmony. And I've proposed certain things for that: the relief of the impaction of the cities, the use of new towns, and of course this doesn't mean you can't continue to emphasize the involvement of the Negro people in black capitalism and free enterprise and the pride of ownership that makes this country so great.
Gentlemen, we have less than 4 minutes. Chancellor.
Governor, you said in a recent speech that Francis Birch, the Maryland Attorney General, had intercepted radio messages from the riot instigators in Chicago, or somebody, asking, quote, what time the riots would start. How did that information come to him?
By way of his automobile telephone, which, of course, is an open situation.
In other words,
To get on the telephone line in his car, and someone was already using this line, and he heard the conversation over the line. You know, there's no security on those telephone lines.
And did any of that information go to federal authorities, or did he feel...
As a matter of fact, he called the authorities immediately and was told that they were already monitoring these conversations.
Going back to this, you say that you speak of an unconscious anarchy among the young, much of it communist-inspired. Is there any evidence that you've been able to get in Maryland or since you've joined this campaign that links up with what Mr. Novak was asking about, an active conspiracy organized by a foreign power?
I think that Mayor Daley's information, already developed by his probe, leads us to believe that there is considerable organization. And I don't see how we can ever believe that the continued non-patriotic, apolitical acts for our system, that these young people, the leaders, and incidentally, they're not all young people. There are certainly a lot of them that aren't. When somebody burns the United States flag, I generally get the idea he's not very friendly to us. And when somebody flies a Viet Cong banner, when someone speaks out favorably for the policies of Ho Chi Minh, I get the idea he's not with us anymore.
And you believe there's a conspiracy involved in this? I'm not trying to put words in your mouth.
A conspiracy, by legal definition, is, under certain circumstances, a conversation of just a very few people. So I would say, yes, there is a conspiracy involved.
Mr. Potter.
Governor, I was struck by your response to Mr. Kilpatrick's question that you would not have changed the substance of your reproach to Negro leaders in Baltimore after the April riots. Would you have done it more privately if you had to do it again?
Well, I'm not sure I can say that I would have done it privately because, frankly, I considered a private airing of that statement, and I was afraid of how it would be related but without having the media there to actually observe and make their own judgments about it. I felt for the safety of everybody concerned and for accurate construction, it had to be public.
Very short, Mr. Kilpatrick.
I know you've said, Governor, that you yourself believe there's no such thing as a quote-unquote Negro vote or Negro block
vote. That's right.
But realistically, sir, how well do you think the Republican ticket will do among Negroes in November?
That depends upon how we get our message across as to what we stand for, how well my record in civil rights can be publicized.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but our time is up. Thank you, Governor Agnew, for being with us today on Meet the Press. I'll tell you about next week's guest in just a minute after this message.
Welcome to Sperry Rand. We'd like to show you our line. Our Remington Rand electronic files store anything and find it in a hurry. At our New Holland division, we make hay balers and a lot of other farm equipment. Pilots use Sperry flight systems to fly hands-off, even land in a fog. Vickers hydraulic systems, that's us too. Among other things, they put the muscle in road graders. Our UNIVAC computers have hundreds of uses, like reserving your seat or room in seconds. The Remington electric shaver shaves any beard from light to heavyweight and anything in between. Well, that's us, Sperry Rand. We're synergistic, which means we do a lot of things and we do each one better because we do all the rest. Call us when you're in the market.
For a printed copy of today's interview, send 10 cents in coin and a stamp, self-addressed envelope to Merkle Press, Box 2111, Washington, D.C., 20013.
Next Sunday on Meet the Press, our guest will be the new chairman of the Democratic National Committee and campaign manager for Hubert Humphrey, Lawrence F. O'Brien. Now this is Lawrence Spivak saying goodbye for Governor Agnew and Meet the Press.
Today's edition of Meet the Press was brought to you by Allstate Insurance Companies, the good hands people who find new ways to bring you better insurance protection. You're in good hands with Allstate. Stay tuned later this afternoon for NBC's coverage of AFL football, followed by the World Series of Golf from Akron, Ohio. And don't forget, tomorrow night, the Houston Oilers play host to the Kansas City Chiefs. All sports action live and in color here on NBC. This is Lee Dayton speaking. Meet the Press has been a public affairs presentation of NBC News and has come to you live from our studios in Washington, D.C.